Madam Clerk, would you read any changes to the agenda, please?
Certainly. Amended items. Addendum to number 10, local food purchase policy. Staff is requesting this item be withdrawn as further revisions to the policy are needed. Addendum to number 7, amending the subject on the agenda to include the appointment of Teresa Heinrich to the Estrella Pleasant Valley Cemetery District. The staff report and transmittal are correct. Added items, pending litigation. A, conference with legal counsel, existing litigation. Number 3, Negrani and Sons et al. Versus County of San Luis Obispo. Conference with real property negotiator. 4, property description, 2198 Los Osos Valley Road, Los Osos, APN numbers 067-011-021 and 067-011-021. Parties negotiating, John Giacomazzi and Janet Klein. Instructions to negotiator, terms and conditions. Number 5, property description, 2350 Los Osos Valley Road in Los Osos. APN numbers 067-031-008 and 067-031-011. Parties negotiating, Donald and Tony Andre and David and Donna Andre. Instructions to negotiator, terms and conditions. Requirement of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice is posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. Done.
All those numbers. Very good. Thank you. The next item on our agenda this morning is our consent agenda, and we have a number of people who would like to speak on items on consent, and I will begin with Mr. Dave Congleton, followed by Carissa Hewitt. Either way, your call.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Dave Congleton of KVEC Radio. I'm here today with the daunting challenge of putting the broadcasting career of Guy Rathbun in perspective in less than 3 minutes. I begin by noting that this is Election Day, a time when we celebrate our democratic process and our cherished institutions. How appropriate that today we should also honor Guy Rathbun. He is certainly a local institution with more than 40 years on the radio, a career devoted to promoting civil dialogue and the free and open exchange of ideas, the heart of any true democracy. How long has Guy been on the radio? Well, let me remind you that when Guy started his career, Grover Beach was Grover City, Leon Panetta was a Republican, and no one but no one took FM radio seriously. The year Guy started in radio was the year I started high school. The year Guy started at KCBX was the year I graduated college. I've been doing radio for 20 years, but I still have another year and a half to go before I reach Guy's halfway mark. No Central Coast broadcaster, radio or TV, can match Guy's on-air record. There is Guy Rathbun, and there is the rest of us. Through his various public affairs shows on KCBX, Guy distinguished himself by giving voice to people and to ideas. That's a pretty powerful gift. Authors got their books promoted, local nonprofits received much-needed publicity, public officials addressed the issues of the day. People, ordinary and extraordinary, were given the chance to be heard. And talk about style. Who better than Guy Rathbun? He's always been a class act, intelligent, respectful, curious, supportive, ethical, staying away from the ranting and raving and demonizing that all too often stains radio today. Like Michael Jackson, formerly of KABC Radio in Los Angeles, or Terry Gross on Fresh Air, Guy emphasized conversation over confrontation. The focus always on the guest, never the host. Guy stepped away from KCBX staff last fall. Why anyone would let Guy get away is beyond me. But we're here this morning to celebrate the past, not debate it. I've always admired Guy as a broadcaster, as a teacher, as a human being. It is a personal honor to be here this morning. Thank you to the County Board of Supervisors for honoring Guy Rathbun today. It's great to see Guy finally get the recognition he deserves. He represents the way radio used to be, the way radio is supposed to be. Congratulations, Guy, and thank you.
Thank you, Dave, for that. I appreciate it. Carissa Hewitt, followed by Eric Greening.
That's a hard act to follow. Good morning. I'm Chrissy Hewitt, a longtime listener and, fortunately, a longtime friend of Guy Rathman. Thank you to the Board of Supervisors for what you are doing today. Although by his own stated reasoning, Guy is not quite, I'm not so sure. What I routinely hear from people who listen to his programs is how thought-provoking they are and how much they learn. What I routinely hear from the people being interviewed is how he always brings out the best in them. This is a pretty good combination, not to mention rare. Then there is this 35-year streak of weekly entrees into the Club McKenzie, where he takes us to hear jazz of the 20s. You don't have to listen long before you know that this is a place where he has deep roots, even if he was born a couple of decades after most of this music was first played. As a teacher of radio production at Cuesta for 20 years, he has given insight and knowledge to many about the on-air world. They easily came to know his passion. All of this and much more is why we are celebrating him, and we invite all of you in the audience, and all of you listening on the radio, to come next Friday night, the 15th, so a week and a half away, June 15th, from 6 to 8 at the County Library Community Room, and we will honor him further there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Hewitt. And again, that's come celebrate with us on Friday, June 15th, 6 to 8 p.m. at San Luis Obispo City County Library. And we'll continue this celebration for Guy. Mr. Greening, followed by Julie Tracker.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I'm glad that the first two speakers said a lot of what I wanted to say, since I have quite a bit of ground to cover here in 3 minutes. But I will say one reason I know so much is because I listen to Guy Rathbun. So that, you know, illumination, not just heat, but illumination, it's important. Under number 10, that also is deserving of congratulations. Local food. This meets both economic and environmental objectives because there are fewer food miles traveled and money stays in the community. I'm glad to see this policy coming forward. On number 17, that's the Los Osos Habitat Conservation Plan. Four species are covered. It looks like it's a fairly quick job. It's supposed to be, this phase at least, is done by October. And it's apparently they're not going to look at the adaptive management and monitoring plan until they get to an implementation phase, which is later. They cite three other HCPs as evidence that this can be done. I looked them up. The record is mixed. The Western Riverside County Multi-Species Conservation Plan, they're calling a victory that they had 11 breeding pairs of burrowing owls in their conservation areas last year. I don't know how many pairs of burrowing owls would be typical in Western Riverside County in the lands that were lost. I wasn't able to find that, but it seems rather piddlish. East Contra Costa County Habitat Conservation Plan, they've been getting about one-tenth of the developer funding they were expecting. Fortunately, they got some federal grants and some timely grants to match it, so they're doing okay for now on acquisition. They don't know where the money for ongoing management and monitoring will come from. Coachella Valley HCP is hard to compare with because they're only focusing on one species, the Coachella Valley fringe-toed lizard. Anyway, I'd like to see a little more track record before we decide that we don't need to update the adaptive management plan right now. Number 20, the Northeast County Habitat Conservation Plan. Obviously, the kit fox got the ball rolling, but one of the tasks apparently includes compile a covered species list. I'm surprised that hasn't been done. They seem to be expecting, because the next task assumes there will be 10 key covered species and 25 others. What kinds of discussions have led us to believe that's the number, and why don't we have a list at the beginning of the contract so that we kind of know what this contract is going to be shaped like? Anyway, lots more questions, but it's time for answers. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Greeney. Julie Tacker, followed by Dr. C. Hyde.
Good morning. I am Julie Tacker from Los Osos. I, too, am speaking to Item 17, the Los Osos Habitat Conservation Plan. I welcome progress in this regard. Maybe we can have an explanation. I think we were here a year ago proving a similar contract with a different consultant, and that effort fell apart and severing of ties with that consultant. Money was spent. What kind of progress did we get from that work? The plan that we're marching forward on today really will address the Morro Shoulder Band dune snail for the most part. Los Osos is a sensitive place. There are really three moratoria, de facto moratoria, in place. Certainly the sewer has halted development over the years. The issues with water has halted development or slowed development over the years. But the habitat mitigation and habitat conservation has also limited growth and development. Growth and development includes public projects, the expansion of our library, the completion of our road system, drainage projects. All of these things have been frustrated or inhibited by these species. Without a no-take agreement, like you got with the wastewater project a few weeks ago, we will still suffer these frustrations. And this, what I did not see in the contract, and some of the questions that Eric raised are excellent, is how we're going to manage that Morro kangaroo rat. Mr. Hutchinson was here a few weeks ago and said it hadn't been seen since 1986. When do we deem a species extinct? It's time that somebody represent Los Osos and step up and say we need to stop spending money on a species that doesn't exist there any longer. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Dr. C. Hyde, followed by Mike Brown. Ms. Hyde.
Dr. C. Hyde, Los Osos. Items 13, 14, 16, the county is putting money into psychiatric health, including social support systems. $33,618,072 and $1,062,000. And I have a question about number 18, request to approve a contract amendment with People's Self-Help Housing to reallocate. And how are you going to reallocate? Homeless Prevention and Rapid Housing Program, HPRP, grant funds, because homelessness is preventable, and that's what the people of Los Osos are trying to tell you. Number 17, request to approve a contract. This is for the Habitat Conservation Plan for Community District 2, Los Osos. How will you conserve habitat when you displace the conservatives who come here week after week? How will you conserve habitat, protect species, when you plan on tearing up the town? And how will you conserve habitat when your financial interest is going to be, as stated 2 weeks ago by your auditor, in the development that is going to come from your questionable infrastructure? Los Osos is a beautiful valley which stretches all the way from the Pacific Ocean down Los Osos Valley Road past the Duval Ranch. And the ecology of this valley up till now has had a direct relationship with the economy of the people. There's low growth. The economy of the people have dictated the conservation and the preservation, and the kind of people that we see in Los Osos have an interest in that. So I have some real concerns about a conflict of interest of what you're trying to accomplish and what you're going to accomplish. And a lot of us who live there, who really enjoy the flora and fauna and the wildlife and the quiet that keeps that wildlife there, have really deep concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hyde. Mike Brown, followed by Lindy Owen.
Mike Brown, representing CoLab, speaking to item 20. The big north and east habitat conservation plan. We think you ought to step back and really look at this. This is sort of being worked on in the background and piecemealed through. One of the things that these plans require, and this one's huge, this is a map of the range of the Kit Fox, which was the one map in the report. As you know, on your planning website, there are lots of other maps showing different listed, endangered, or whatever species in various areas of the county. So this could be quite large. One of the things that's required as part of this plan is acquiring existing habitat to be the offset. Well, you haven't talked about what this will cost, how it'll be financed, whose land will be included, and what if no property owners volunteer their land? Secondly, these plans require conservation easements to protect existing habitat. So you got the same questions for that. So then you've got to improve and restore degraded habitat. Who will pay for this? Will the ranchers and farmers and other citizens be forced to pay for this as conditions for putting in a winery or switching a field that has livestock to a cultivated field? And then you have to manage these habitats and create new habitats. This will only make things worse. As a result, even more areas will be off limits. They'll be subject to more regulations. Taken to its logical extreme over the decades, this program could spread to such a degree that large blocks of private property would effectively be converted to natural preserves, taken off the tax rolls, and further exacerbating the regulatory tax fee debt death spiral. This is nothing less than a government shakedown. It's promoted by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We're telling people, promise not to use your land, and the county will force somebody else who's expanding a crop or building a barn or building a house or whatever to pay you for a credit. This is nothing but land use cap and trade, another scheme to take away private property rights and increase the power of the government. You should step back, disclose the full scope of the program, how much it's going to cost, what's going to be covered, and talk about how this is really going to work. Till then, you should stop it.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. My last request to speak, Lindy Owen.
Good morning, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I, too, would like to applaud and celebrate Mr. Guy Rathbun from KCBX. I've been listening to him, I guess, for 28 years, and he's certainly been a big part of my life. I just wanted to say that I feel like he's a Central Coast gem, and he's a combo between Bill Moyer and Ed Sullivan. And we're so lucky to have him, and I look forward to many more years. Item 17, Habitat Management Plan for Los Osos. This plan has been going on for 15 years, and the whole idea and intention of it is that as construction and destruction go on with growth that supposedly having a sewer is supposed to bring us, this would protect the endangered species, which at this point does seem to be mostly concentrated on the shoulder band snail. the interesting thing is that in Los Osos, everybody knows if you don't want to get stuck with that habitat conservation plan, what you do is go in on a Saturday or a Sunday with a bulldozer and just strafe the properties that you are concerned about. And then if anybody turns you in, you pay a small penalty. So the whole idea of setting up a plan which would affect people in the future if we were ever to have water for build-out is pretty ludicrous, because as things go, I don't see a very strong structure to make this an easier process for people to more fairly address destruction of habitat. And I, too, am concerned about where the money is going to come from. I think Eric explained that oftentimes these plans get put in place, but then there is not adequate funding for them. So anyway, I just hope that this habitat conservation plan could be defined a little bit better as to the scope of what it's doing. In the past, we've also seen habitat exchange from the lower areas of Los Osos, and then you buy habitat that that species can't live in a higher area. Those are the questions that I would hope that Ms. Jody McGraw takes a better look at, and we had hoped for more from Lisa Weiss, but I hopefully will see something good come out of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. And I do have one more request to speak, Ms. Susan DeCarli, on item number 20.
Thank you and good morning. My name is Susan DeCarli, and I'm here on behalf of the City of Paso Robles. The city is a partner in the North County Habitat Conservation Plan, and the city fully supports the board continuing with the contract, the revised contract, to continue this project. This program, the Habitat Conservation Program, is very important to the city as it streamlines the biological review process as development or covered activities will be included. And while it provides a consistent and uniform mitigation program when working with the agencies, it also will result, or the objective is to have a take permit so that when development occurs, folks moving forward with the projects aren't penalized unnecessarily if they're a voluntary participant. And I think that's also important to note, is that this is a voluntary program. No one is going to go out and take anybody's land or condemn property, et cetera. Property owners could be voluntarily participating in the program. I just want to make that really, really clear. And as far as mitigation goes, right now, impacts to endangered covered species are required to mitigate their impacts. Right now, it's a little bit arbitrary on that process. With this program adopted down the road, that process will not be so arbitrary. Mitigation will still be required, but again, if there's an impact to a covered species, property owners and developers would have a take permit and wouldn't be otherwise penalized. I just want to encourage the board to move forward on approving this contract. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Carler. I appreciate you setting the record straight on that item. I will close it to public comment and ask staff who's here to address some of the questions before I ask my colleagues. Ms. Sherrell, there was a question regarding the people's self-help housing reallocation. I know it's a rather straightforward issue, but if you could just quickly speak to that item.
Morgan, Trail Planning staff. This is a reallocation of $1,300 of Homelessness Prevention Rapid Rehousing Program funds. It's a stimulus grant that expires in August. It was a three-year grant, and People Self-Help Housing is requesting to move some funds from Housing Relocation and Stabilization Services, which includes case management, for example, to data collection and evaluation. And this concludes my discussion of how money's moving around.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you, Ms. Terrell. Mr. Keith, did you want to address the questions on the Los Osos HCP as well as the North and East HCP?
Sure. Good morning. Trevor Keith, Planning and Building. So I think just to let folks know, HCPs, why we're trying to do this is to assist landowners in our county, whether it's in Los Osos or in the North County. It really is to get a take permit. that then we give, we hold the permit, and then we pass on the third-party beneficiary status to folks that want coverage under our take permit. So it's voluntary. You can go. You can negotiate with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Department of Fish and Game on your own to get the take permit yourself. Or if we actually get through this process, you can come under our umbrella permit. That's what we're trying to do to extend take coverage for those species. I think it was brought up on the adaptive management piece in Los Osos. What we're looking at is we actually, for adaptive management, we need to get through the actual process of what we're going to do before we can look at how we're going to implement adaptive management on the original management plan that we'll put forward. We still haven't developed that, so that's part of this contract moving forward. Let me just look.
There was a question regarding the contractor as well. You have a new contractor for Los Osos.
Oh, right. Yeah. So when our contract was put on hold for our grant extension, it was determined that we should go back out to bid and find a contractor that was better suited. We did make progress as far as on the administrative draft for Los Osos, the HCP. We made enough progress that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife and California Department of Fish and Game would extend our contract. So we did make progress. We just didn't make as much as we wanted to, so we chose to go back out to bid. We looked at 8 different consultants, and we're bringing the one forward that we think will get the job done.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Keith. Supervisor Meacham has a question.
Thank you. Trevor, thank you. We had quite a lengthy conversation about this yesterday, and I think one thing that I want to make sure everybody is aware of and clear is the fact that whether or not they fall under the umbrella of the county, if they decided to do this on their own, this is something that's required of them by another agency. Is that
Yeah, that's exactly right. So under the Endangered Species Act, whether it's federal or state, if you have Endangered Species on your property, you have to go get these permits or you're open up to fine from those agencies. What we're trying to do is help streamline that so we can be a one-stop shop permit so you don't have to go out individually and deal with this on your own. That's the effort.
Yeah, I think that's important to recognize. But the other part of it is how the costs for this are established.
Right. So there is an economic piece in both the Los Osos and the North County. We work with an economist as part of the contract to determine kind of projecting land values, looking at kind of how much take authorization under these two plans would incur and how we would offset that. And we work with kind of a financial economist to project out different factors to come up with land values and mitigation values that can be defensible. And on both those plans, we're not there yet.
And this is all going to happen in a relatively short period of time. You told me this, come hell or high water, this will be completed on the time that's suggested.
Yes, that's correct. Both these contracts, we have grant money, and we got the extension, and then we do have a limit on that time, so we need to move them forward.
Thank you, Trevor.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Keith.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, I'll come back to my colleagues and ask if there are any items on consent they would like to speak to. Mr. Gibson?
None, sir.
Mr. Hill?
None, thank you.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, I have a quick comment on 6, 8, and 16.
6, 8, and 16?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Mr. Teixeira.
None, thank you.
Okay, and I would like to just make a comment on 6 and 10, but Supervisor Meacham, I'll let you just go ahead and run your numbers here, 6, 8, and 16.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment on Mr. Rappin. I'm sorry he left. I know that all of us, each and every one of us, have been invited to appear on his show on interviews. And he is one that makes you very, very comfortable when you get there. I really appreciated that as an elected official. You never know what you're going to get when you go on a radio show. And he is very, very respectful and very well informed. So I appreciated the opportunity to visit with him. Item number 8, I just wanted to quickly comment on the pension trust election. I know that Matt Jansen has been selected to be on the pension trust, and there's a lot of mystery in terms of who and why we have certain people on the pension trust. And I want to assure the public that these folks that get on the pension trust, they're then charged with attending the Wharton School of Business to understand how finances work. So they're not, this isn't just let's go throw a dart at the wall and see what works for the finances for the pension trust. They're very well informed. They make very, very astute decisions, and they're very engaged in the whole process. So I think that that's important to recognize, that these folks take that position on the pension trust board very, very seriously, and they are watching over an awful lot of what the county is doing in terms of its pensions.
Supervisor Meacham, Mr. Gibson also wanted to speak to
that. Thank you, and if I might, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the other thing to note about our pension system that it is completely independent of the county. This is a board that is selected from the beneficiaries and potential beneficiaries of the pension trust system, and they are a sovereign entity that manages those financial affairs and has done so very well over a number of years, both good and bad. We are not part of the great state system, CalPERS. We are not covered under what's considered the 1937 Act. We are unique or almost unique in having a completely independent pension trust, and that has served us well. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Gibson and Supervisor Meacham, on that item. It is important. Public pensions are a big item in the news these days, and it's good to give clarity where we can. We do have our own system and are able to manage it ourselves. We're not tied in with others, so I see that as a benefit. Supervisor Meacham, you also wanted to speak to item 16.
Actually, what I'd like to do is if I could get Mr. Hamm to come up. There's been a couple of questions about the dollar amount here and what this is going to, how this works. And so I thought it would be good for the public to hear from the experts on why and what this involves.
Thank you, Jeff Hamm, Health Agency Director. Unfortunately, we have many clients that are required to be placed for their treatment in residential treatment facilities, and they range in intensity from state hospital facilities to the locked Institute for Mental Disease, IMD facilities, and they essentially they work down in terms of intensity of care. Board and care facilities, we have two that are run by the company with whom we're asking your board to approve an amendment with our contract for the current fiscal year with them. The bottom line is that it's really good news. We have fewer people in the higher intensity state hospital and IMD facilities, and we're able to manage that population in a way, help them step down to lower level facilities, which is the case with these two owned by Synergy. So while we're increasing the contract with Synergy, it's not costing us more. We are using funds that we would have spent on IMD facilities. So it's good for the clients and it's good for our budget.
And Mr. Hamm, are we tracking data that would show the successes of this, all these programs?
Well, we are. Of course, it's all confidential, but we are. We work with each of these clients as individuals and as their treatment plans would indicate. So,
thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hamm. And I just also want to follow up on item number 6, a resolution recognizing Guy Rathbun for his years of service to the public through radio. And I, too, am a KCBX listener and have been for many, many years and enjoyed Guy's programming and had the opportunity to appear on a number of his programs over the years, and they were always very engaging and very informative. On item number 10, Mr. Greening raised that. That's our local food purchase policy. We actually pulled that from the consent agenda today, and we'll bring that back on June 19th. We wanted to do a little refinement on the language of that policy, so it will be coming back on June 19th. With that, I know staff has a comment to make, but I'll go ahead and take a motion to approve consent.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda as amended. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. And item number one on consent, Mr. Grant, you want to give a little clarification, actually, or description of how we're going to handle our budget hearings, which begin next Monday. So, Mr. Grant, would you like to
thank you very
speak
much,
to that, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, Jim Grant, County Administrator. Yeah, item number one is what we call a supplemental document to the proposed budget. It just has some technical corrections. But the point of my comments today is just to make sure that the public knows that we have budget hearings starting next Monday at 9 a.m., which will begin a three-day process of reviewing the county budget. The board will go through each of the functional areas that we have, from public safety to health and social services and a variety of other ones. So we will start 9 a.m., give a staff report, take public comment, and then begin the budget deliberations at that point. My guess is that based on the budget that we have this year and the lack of really large items to discuss, it'll probably finish on day one for county budgets themselves. Tuesday would most likely be a carryover day if there are other items that the board can discuss those. If not, we'll basically have a break on Tuesday, come back Wednesday for community project funding at that point in time, which again starts at 9 a.m. So that concludes my comments. I hope that the public tunes in. They can look at the budget online at the county website. It's slocounty.ca.org. And I hope everybody takes a look at it. Actually, .gov, I believe, not .org, .gov.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Grant. I just do want to comment that, you know, the county staff has been working on the budget since last fall, and this is the fiscal year 12-13 budget, and it's all packaged nicely in a budget document. And because of the work that's been done over the past several months, and because we have regular meetings with staff as we move through the process, a lot of the questions have already been answered, at least for the board, but it is the public's opportunity beginning Monday to comment on our county budget for next fiscal year. So if you are interested in any of the items in our budget, tune in Monday morning, 9 a.m., and track it, because if we do move through it quickly, we'll complete that review on Monday and then come back Wednesday morning for our contributions to outside agencies. So do follow that if you do have an interest. Next item on our agenda this morning is presentations. We have one, but first I need a motion for
so moved.
Approval.
Okay. Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the presentation calendar. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Mr. Teixeira, would you read the presentation resolution, please?
Thank you, Chairman Patterson, and I do this gladly. This following resolution is to recognize the Latter-day Saints Church for their service to the county and specifically the Lopez Lake Recreation Area. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas the County of San Luis Obispo operates a Lopez Lake Recreation Area and many facilities within the area have declined in appearance, usability, and safety. And whereas leadership of the Latter-day Saints Church desired to provide a significant volunteer effort completing improvement projects at the Lopez Lake Recreation Area, and whereas leadership of the Latter-day Saints Church secured $10,000 of donations of materials and supplies and enlisted 350 volunteers from their membership, and whereas 350 volunteer members of the Latter-day Saints Church completed over 1,400 service hours to improve campsite safety, the office building exteriors, nature center seating, Vista Lago swim area, marina boat dock surfaces, Lopez Lake signage, and Arboleda landscapes. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors that the membership of the Latter-day Saints Church be hereby commended for their strong efforts to put forward as volunteers to complete essential maintenance and repairs of recreational facilities within the Lopez Lake Recreation Area.
thank you.
We look forward to receive the...
Curtis Black, Deputy Director of Erie County Parks, and with us today is John Kilpalanian. He is first counselor of the Santa Maria stake for Latter-day Saints Church. And
Curtis,
we also...
One moment.
Stay for your photo.
Here we go. Stacey.
Here we go. And we wanted to have our supervising ranger, Bob Yetter, come on over for that.
Sure.
Good. Very good. Thank you. And if Curtis, would you like to comment, please, again?
Yes, thank you. John and his group, if they had only worked on one of these locations, County Parks would have been extremely happy. Supervisor Teixeira and I were able to come and visit on the work day, and it was ants on sugar cubes. We had maybe it was closer to 400 people. They were on about six different work sites. They were sealing decks. They were removing, replacing twisted wood on the bench seating at the little nature center. It's just an amazing. They took fascia boards and siding off of the office building and replaced it all with the weatherproof Trek type boards. Amazing work, and we really do appreciate your work, John, and all of the work they did. Can't say enough about it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to public comment on items not on the agenda. We'll start with Julie Rodewald, followed by Rick Swan. You look quite good, considering
patriotic.
See long how, hours you've been putting
yeah,
in.
Yeah, see how I look tomorrow days. Morning. That may be the real test. Good morning, Board. Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. Several speakers have already said today is Election Day, and so I'm just here to remind our voters that the polls are open until 8 o'clock tonight. If you have a vote-by-mail ballot, it needs to get turned into a polling place or to our office by 8 o'clock tonight in order to be counted. We do have our drive-by drop-off. It's the only drive-through in the city of San Luis Obispo, so we proudly put it up for every election. So hopefully that will be very busy today. We have about 44,000 ballots, vote-by-mail ballots that have yet to be turned in. We hope that everybody will be sporting their I voted sticker at the end of today. We will be, I see them all on the five of you. We will be posting results soon after 8 o'clock tonight. We've got about 39,000 ballots that have been counted. Those will be posted first, and then we'll continue to post throughout the night until we finish. We're hoping by midnight we'll have our final unofficial election night results up. And those are on our website at slovote.com. Very easy for people to get to look at those. We'll be posting as the results start coming in about every 20, 30 minutes. But just a reminder that final unofficial election night means just that. We could have 10 to 20,000 ballots left over that get turned into the polls today, both provisionals and vote-by-mails. So we'll be posting updates to our website in the coming days about the remaining ballots, what our counting schedule is, and try and get through those. We know that candidates are anxious for final results, and we want to make sure that they get accurate results as well as quick results. So, but we'll be keeping the public informed. If anybody has any questions about their polling places throughout the day, our phone lines are open at 781-5228, and we welcome all of your calls and hope everybody's on their way to the polls today. Thank you.
Very good. And Ms. Rodewald, again, it's important that folks who have the vote-by-mail ballots, also referred to as absentee ballots, those must be turned into your office or to a polling place, not put in the mail. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. We can't accept postmarks, so they have to be in our hands or in one of our polling places in San Luis County by 8 o'clock tonight. So that's the most important thing.
And can they go to any polling place and turn them?
Absolutely. They can turn their ballots in at any polling place in the county.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Swan.
Mr. Chair, Board, welcome. Today, not only is today Election Day, but one of the other things is very important to us in the public health community. Thursday is National CPR Day, and through the efforts of the County Health Agency, they've spearheaded 13 agencies throughout the county, EMS agencies, and we're putting on what is hands-only CPR. This literally will only take less than 10 minutes for you to learn. It's hands-only. It's simple. It's easy. It saves lives. The city of Seattle has the records on file for this. It's an amazing change in where we've come from with the breaths and how many breaths do we take and how many compressions. This is just hands-only CPR. 13 agencies from around the county are going to be providing these locations. It's convenient, lunchtime between 11 and 1 o'clock on Thursday the 7th. Take a sack lunch or something, come down. There are locations in Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton, Morro Bay, the Five Cities area of Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach. The city here has a location. St. Louis Ambulance is doing one. Cambria has a location. Sierra Vista, Arroyo Grande Hospital, and French Hospital has one. California Men's Colony has one for the CMC employees only. And Cal Fire and County Fire will be doing seven locations throughout the county. So you can get more information on the county webpage, slowpublichealth.org or slowemsa.org. For all these locations where we're at around the county, but simple, life-saving, hands-only CPR takes you 5 minutes, and it can save a life. Thank you, sir.
Very good. Thank you, Chief Swan. I appreciate that. And it's a simple thing to learn. Everyone should know how to do that. You could save a life. Let's see. Julie Tacker, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Good morning again. I am Julie Tacker from Los Osos. Much of what we come here week after week to talk about is the Los Osos Wastewater Project. The project itself is large in scope, but its details have gotten lost in the conversation over the water, the cost, the location of the plant. A detail that I brought forward 2 weeks ago was the moving of a standby generator house. Apparently, the Coastal Commission required Public Works to move what was called the Lupin pump station and the generator house associated with it from a little corner on the, in Cuesta by the Sea. And your engineers took it upon themselves to move it without consulting the community. When this was brought to my attention, I raised some issues and I made myself very clear to the Coastal Commission that this was an inappropriate move, the location that they'd chosen, and tragically the money that was spent on their time. My concerns were addressed, and then now Coastal has asked that it be moved again. What I'm here to ask is that you take it to the public. This is their neighborhood. The people who live in Los Osos know the topography, the drainage courses, the environment better than anyone on your public works staff. So I would like to see some process. This generator house is concrete. It's nearly 500 square feet. It's a forever building. These don't get moved once they're built. They do not have to be near or very close to the underground facilities of the pumping of sewage. This is a remote electronic device, a generator, can be wired from some distance. We have a similar situation in Baywood Park where the generator is 2,000 feet away, half a mile away from the pump facilities. So, again, I'm here today to ask that you take it to the public and let them advise your public works staff where they think the pump station or the pump generator should go. Their website is not a I'm sure Mr. Gibson will tell you, or you've learned, Coastal Commission has signed off on the 100 and some conditions of the wastewater project. These conditions and their approvals and what resulted in the months and months of conversations with that agency have not been posted to your website, and I would ask that they be posted immediately.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Thacker. Ms. Taylor, followed by Dr. Seehy.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor, and I'm a resident of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. The rainy season, the season depended on for groundwater basin recharge by many communities such as Los Osos, has passed. Adequate water for Los Osos groundwater basin recharge and the slowing of saltwater intrusion continues to be an acute problem. The water supply and demand by all areas of Los Osos are unbalanced. This board must step up to the plate and cease issuing building permits for the entire area encompassing Los Osos. A dependable and sustainable water supply for building permits cannot be depended upon on replacement of low-flow fixtures or credits from the replacement of low-flow fixtures in existing residents as a water usage offset. This is not feasible. As a water usage offset, the ISJ continues to drag on with no verifiable conservation program or replacement program with low-flow fixtures implemented, or even an announced action plan begun. This board cannot continue ignoring the saltwater intrusion and the overdrafting of the Los Osos water basin. The ISJ members must be required to hire a hydrologist outside the county to be contracted with to identify recharge zones, as well as developing a computer model to identify areas that most effectively recharge the basin groundwater. We're in trouble. The dewatering of trenches in the low-lying areas of the sewer project can reduce the available potable groundwater for use in the entire community. This present locality for trench water disposal has no assurance of recharging the basin water for years. Do not let greed for property taxes be your guiding hand. We need you as our representatives to help us now, not after the fact. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Excuse me. Dr. C. Height, followed by Mike Brown. I'll take that.
Dr. C. Height, Los Osos Prohibition Zone. Withholding services based on a sense of worth was found to be discriminatory and illegal in 1999 by the U.S. Supreme Court. Withholding services that could lead to the loss of independence, loss of community participation is what the Olmstead Act is all about. Withholding services that ensures restricted or segregated living, you can't do it. You can't predict the consequences of indifference, and jail is a loss of independence. You have the consequence of death in Los Osos. $1,300 that includes case management could save lives, and data management cannot. And you have all received an item that shows that you're bypassing Amtrak. The jet set is not going to be able to transport through. There's no buses that go directly from the government center to Amtrak. And you do sit on those boards, and I have some information that I've collected in the past on your budget hearings, and it's about county council. It includes a mission statement, and it it defines the council's service, which says it provides representation and legal advice to the Board of Supervisors. 73 county boards, commissions, departments, agencies, or divisions, including 5 joint powers agencies in which the county belongs, and to the managers of the 24 boards governed special districts. So you didn't, in the past, the board was able to turn to the council to try to undermine the ADA, which now includes the Olmstead Act. You didn't need to turn to your board, to your council, and tell them to please read the updates on the ADA. It was their responsibility, and it was their responsibility to allow a senior disabled population like the population of Los Osos to go places, be in the community, and transport. I'm putting this on the record. It says filing a claim against the county of San Luis Obispo. This is blank formed, and I didn't file a claim against the county of San Luis Obispo. You've spent a lot of money, apparently, and I'm going to address this publicly in my public comment, because you treat me differently, and that different treatment is adverse, and I can't speak to you before the noon time because you simply won't tell the audience to not stand here in the middle of the aisle and talk and disrupt my speech.
Thank you, Dr. Hype. Mike Brown, followed by Eric Greening.
Mike Brown, representing CoLab. A couple of weeks ago, as part of your third quarter financial report, you had an update on debt. And in 3 minutes, we can't talk about it comprehensively, so we may have to do it over time. But refer you to the handout here. The first exhibit is a page 34 from the 2011 consolidated annual financial report, and you'll see that the principal debt in that report down in the lower right corner of that chart is $425 million overall, and you can see the categorization of the kinds, and that's just the principal. Exhibit B is an illustration of taking and illustrating the full amount of debt. And this table's from 2009. If it were done today, it would be somewhat different. This was from the offering statement for the refunding bonds for a portion of the pension obligation bond debt. And you can see all in that what the payments and everything will be over time, including taking out those refunding bonds, which is a pretty big number. And then right behind that is a statement from that statement. I refer you down there about two-thirds of the way down. Even though this debt is not subject to property tax backing or something, it does say the obligation of the county to make the payments with respect to the bonds is an absolute and unconditional obligation of the county imposed by law and enforceable against the county pursuant to the retirement law and the payment principal and interest. So I would think for all this debt you would want comprehensive tables that show the principal and interest. And as an illustration, and there was a reference to the good job of the retirement system, the last exhibit's a nice table that shows a forecast of potential liability. And I think you need a nice chart like this for all the different kinds of debt, showing the interest and spreading it out over its life. And, of course, you can see in this one you've got $281 million of unfunded liability today. You're going to drop the assumption rate to 7.25. This shows what it would be at 6.75, which would actually be better. Look down a couple of years, And you can see that the contribution rates forecasted will eat a huge percentage of your operating budget. So I just think you can't look at this through a keyhole.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Eric Greening. Are you? Yes, there you are, followed by Ron Skinner.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and I guess I'll start with this little understated fashion statement. They're handing them out for free around the county to registered voters at polling places. It's just a little red, white, and blue, just makes you look very elegant thing that says, I voted. And when you think about people around the world who either can't or can't do it in a meaningful context, definitely those of us who can need to appreciate and we need to exercise. The glue on this thing actually kind of wears off fairly quickly, but the impact of the decisions we make lasts a long time, and we have the opportunity today to be in on those decisions, so I hope everyone will join me in a trip to the polls. The other thing I wanted to talk about, hydraulic fracturing, the once scheduled the session that would have been sponsored by the Water Resources Advisory Committee in this room on June 22nd is not going to happen as originally scheduled. The Department of Oil, Gas, Geothermal Resources, the Dogger, from the Department of Conservation is doing their own roadshow, not at the invitation of others, but kind of taking their own show on the road around California. They've already been in Bakersfield and Ventura. The closest locations to here, the second closest location will be Salinas on June 27th. The closest to here will be Santa Maria on July 11th. Neither one do they yet have the exact time or place, nor do we know that much about the format. The format here would have been that the regulating agencies, such as Dogger and the Regional Water Quality Control Board, APCD, could have presented, the industry could have presented, and citizens who've done a lot of research on the hazards could have presented. I'm not sure, again, what the format will be in these official meetings, but given that there are already fracking wells in Los Alamos to our south, there are nine about to go in just to our north in the Hames Valley, Monterey County, in the Paso Robles groundwater basin, I'm going to ask, you know, we can keep waiting around to assemble information. It might be a good precautionary thing to do would be to agendize a temporary moratorium while we inform ourselves so that our water and air resources remain protected while we learn what we need to learn about whether there is any way we can permit this activity consistent with public safety and the safety of our irreplaceable resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. And it's my understanding that the RAC, Water Resources Advisory Committee, is still planning on bringing a informational workshop to the county sometime in the fall. Mr. Skinner, followed by Gary Freiberg.
Thank you. My name is Ron Skinner. I represent the WASNA Foundation, and I'd like to comment on the recent Acceleron appeal hearing from May 15th. Given the number of mineral right owners who spoke on behalf of Acceleron at that hearing, it is evident that the pressure and intent to drill for oil clearly goes well beyond Acceleron's proposed 12 wells. In fact, the mineral right owners present at that hearing represent approximately 10,000 acres of mineral rights in the South County area, which Acceleron has leased and has been telling its investors for years that it intends to develop. County staff has not been able to actually answer the question of whether Acceleron's 12-well project is economically viable as proposed. And without analyzing what the economic break-even would be in terms of production and number of wells, it is impossible to analyze what the net economic impact to the county would be from the proposed project. Unfortunately, staff does not have the expertise required to analyze the potential production and economic impact of Acceleron's project. I would like to request that the county set aside money to do an adequate analysis and to bring on an oil industry expert capable of analyzing these aspects of Acceleron's project, in addition to analyzing Acceleron's estimate of reserves document. In the 1980s, our planning department had an energy division. Our oil-producing neighbor to the south, Santa Barbara County, has an energy division that employs a staff of 7 people and has an annual budget of $3.7 million. They are tasked with evaluating, permitting, and enforcing permit conditions on energy development projects. I would like to request that next week in your budget hearing deliberations, you discuss budgeting for the reinstatement of an energy division within the planning department with an energy expert with petroleum industry experience. If the Acceleron project is approved, it will open the doors to countywide exploration of the Monterey Shale Formation, which is scattered throughout all districts in the county and underlies at least 590 square miles of San Luis Obispo County. The county must be prepared with a comprehensive petroleum development plan and adequate staffing to carry out and enforce that plan. Our current economic base of tourism, agriculture, and quality of life could easily be destroyed by an economy of oil production that is created through poor planning, piecemeal permitting, and ineffective enforcement. Please do not let that happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Skinner. Gary Freiberg, followed by Ben DeFada.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm Gary Freiberg. I'm a member of the Los Osos Finance Advisory Committee, but I'm here as a private citizen. And what I wanted to talk about on May 30th, Mr. John Waddell did an immediate release on the $83 million loan that was granted for the sewer in Los Osos. So I figured that out, that the $83 million, the monthly payment on the first $83 million is about $285,000 a month for this loan. It works out to about $3.5 million a year. So this is money that, as I've talked about before, is going to come out of the economy and not be available for jobs and promotion of growth. It's $57 per month per household for the next 40 years. So all of us will probably be on the other side 40 years from now, and this will continue $57 a month. In the way of interest, when we take this money and we multiply it out, it's that $83 million loan is $136 million. So over the course of the 40 years, this loan is going to cost Los Osos and the county over $53 million, almost $54 million over the course of the loan. The thought that I have is that the Lake Nacimiento Water Project for the entire county is $193 million. It's shared by 75,000 households. The Los Osos project is $190 million, and it's on the backs of 5,000 households. So when we start taking the figures and we say it's $57 a month for this $83 million that we just got, starting in last December, I got an assessment for $780 a month for the wastewater treatment plant. That's $65 a month. So far, those two figures are $122 a month. Supervisor Gibson has said that this is going to top out at $165 a month. And it's very hard for me to believe that we've only got $40 a month to go, and that's going to take care of the rest of the money that needs to be borrowed, about $107 million, and it's also going to take care of the operation and maintenance. And all we have to do is suffer is another $40 a month. We're almost there. And the first shovel hasn't even been dug, and we're already at $122 a month. We're already taking out $7 million a year from the economy, and that's not including the multiplier effect. What I would like to see is an itemization. Where does this $165 a month come from? Can you go to your office after this meeting and go to your computer and take a look at the itemization of where that $165 totals up? Or is that just a figure that just pulled out of the air, and you're trusting your future and the future of Los Osos residents on a figure that's not substantiated by anything? Where is the proof? Where is the itemization? And if it's there, then there's nothing to hide, and it ought to be clear, and show me the $165 a month. We're at $122 right now. We've only got $40 a month to go. If that's the truth, if that's the way it is, then let's see it.
Thank you, Mr. Freiberg. Ms. Owen? Ben DeFara, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning, Chairman Patterson, Board, Sheriff, Public. Ben DeFara from Los Osos with the next chapter as the Toilet Flushes, starring Bruce Gibson. How appropriate it is that today is Election Day, a country formed to break away from the dictator king that was overtaxing the people of the New World. These people came to this part of the world to get away from being taxed with no representation, freedom to worship, and pursuit of happiness, government intrusion, and government regulations. So here we are, 236 years later, and what do we have here in Los Osos? Pretty near what the revolution was all about, especially here in this county where several dictators, with the help of you other two that are up for re-election, want to tax and tax several thousand people out of their homes because of his overpriced, unaffordable, energy hawk, stinking, antiquated gravity collection sewer project as proposed by these two, Gibson and Oakland. Oh, sure, the poor and low-income people will be bailed out by different agencies of this county. But what about the middle-income families that reside in the zone? Their new hire assessments will force them to move out of their homes with their families to who knows where. I've heard that the dreamers in Los Osos that want this expensive gravity sewer are saying the seven of us that come here week after week to bitch about the cost of the project are spreading the word that we don't want a sewer. This is out and out lie. We do want a sewer, but a better and cheaper sewer project that's available today. That's proven and better with off-the-shelf technology. But no, you dreamers go along with Gibson, who refuses to allow the alternatives at the bidding table. 6 years ago, when we threw out the three CSD directors, recall is a better name, in disgrace, the new three directors with the backing of the community had a plan ready to build a better and cheaper sewer project that would already have been completed and up and running 3 or 4 years ago. But your dreamer leaders who were going to profit from the gravity project scheme the way to bankrupt the Los Osos CSD and with Blakesley's help, AB 2701 legislation put the project in the county's hands. Well, skipping down, let's see. Have you noticed that Supervisor Gibson does not want to have a study of recent nitrate levels or an affordability study of those in the probation zone? Well, you should, you dreamers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DeFara. Lindy Owen, followed by Elaine Watson. And Mr. Barrow, if you wanted to speak, I do not have a request to speak form from you.
It's on the floor.
Ms. Owen.
Good morning, Lindy Owen. From the Los Osos Prohibition Zone, where the nitrates are minor and the saltwater intrusion is extreme. I wanted to start my talk with Pavo's Nacimiento water plan for Los Osos, because what appears to be happening now with the sewer, which is just a front, I believe, for setting it up so that we have development, but we don't have development if we don't have water. And, of course, 30 years of ignoring our water issues has created quite a problem in Los Osos. We're losing our lower aquifer. Our upper aquifer is probably going to get pushed out to the ocean because we fail to address it. We sit and wait for an ISJ decision to go someplace. Anyway, this Nacimiento water plan, there's 6,000 acres of mercury-tainted water that are still unsold with the project that Mr. Pavo Ogren put together. And Mr. Gibson must completely approve of us getting a $32 million pipeline to bring that water into Los Osos, because he has told it publicly, he has said that we will have a water supply in 3 years when the project starts up. When asked what that water supply is, there are no answers. It seems to be that there is some kind of a conservation plan. Well, it hasn't even started. If anybody really cared about water in Los Osos, we would have started. I want to rush quickly to the problems that are happening with why we don't have water. Up on the screen, I'm showing some pictures of the Broderson disposal area, which is supposed to take 800,000 gallons of treated wastewater, and it's been questionable from the very beginning. The worst part of this plan is that there are approximately 45 century-old eucalyptus and cypress that were planted at the turn of the century. They are beautiful. It's a beautiful walk area, as you can see by some of the slides. This, because the county can't do any better than come up with reuse plans of old sewer projects, instead of moving, I'm going to show this, and I don't know if anybody can zoom in. This is the property site that is where these trees are being shown. If these trees are removed, there's no reason that this project could not be put over here on other open space that isn't filled with century-year-old trees, and that it's a huge forest. If the county wanted to do the right thing, they would move the project, the disposal field, over here into this veldt-grass-ridden coastal dune scrub, and they would go ahead and dispose the water there. This water is not going to get into our aquifer because it's already intruded by salt water. It takes 13 years for this disposal plan to begin working. This is a complete failure, and to take these trees out and remove this habitat is a crime. If the county can't come up with something better than this, you need to go back and see what's going on. This project is a mess.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Elaine Watson, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good morning. Elaine Watson, Los Osos. I'm here to introduce a clip. It's from your May 22nd meeting afternoon session. Jerry Seebach was giving an update, a third quarter update, and Richard Markinson will follow up with his comments. Thank you.
Well, I mean, while I've got the floor, I mean, I think there's also the, in terms of the economic activity that would happen if the building moratorium was removed in Los Osos could be a strong positive factor. We've had a building moratorium, I think, for 20 years in that community. So when that, in the boom times, if that had been unleashed in the 80s or the 90s, it would have been massive. I don't think it'll be massive, but it will certainly be positive for the economy in terms of jobs and economic activity, not a negative when that moratorium comes off. So the there is an upside to the project financially.
Okay, Mr. Margetson.
Richard Margetson. Well, I guess we understand now why we haven't been able to, for the last 5 years with public comment, get an economic impact report commissioned by this board. We have Jerry Seebach. Unleashed in the 80s and 90s. If we had been able to unleash this development in the 80s and 90s, where would we be? Mr. Seebach doesn't remember that 1,100 homes were built in the 80s after 8313 was implemented by the Regional Water Quality Control Board, because there was a sewer coming, and don't worry about it, we'll be online by the time any impacts are felt by these 1,100 homes. Wonder where we'd be right now with the basin if 1,100 homes weren't drying off of that basin. Positive economic impact and a financial positive for the community. How does unleashing the building on 700 vacant lots help the retired couple on fixed income with a set aside of between $150 and $200 a month? How does that help them? How does it help the family of four living paycheck to paycheck that aren't in the trades industry or in the development community? How does it help them financially? How does it help a disabled person in Los Osos on fixed income for the rest of their life? with 150 to 200, which will increase over time because O&M cost will increase on the monthly portion of the project cost as time goes by. Yeah, there's a positive financial impact to this, positive financial impact for the county. You have more property taxes coming in. Oh, and that will relate, and projects will relate to some additional public facility fees being made available for Los Osos. So maybe we can get that community park we have been promised for years. The only ones that benefit from the building moratorium being lifted in Los Osos are the developers and the builders. We don't have a lumber yard in town. We don't have a supply house. And no matter what happens in Los Osos, we're never going to have an Embarcadero. We're never going to have a Pismo Dunes. We're never going to have any of those draws. And what Mr. Seabox forgets is it's not just the wastewater project. You have a number of other factors that have to come into play before you ever can allow building in Los Osos.
Thank you,
good luck.
Mr. Margetson. Al Barrow, that concludes my request to speak on public comment.
Good morning. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. And I think the first thing I'd like to do is show a picture of the areas in Los Osos that need to be dewatered. If you look at these areas, this corner right here where my light is, 3rd Street, has a sewer design with a depth of about 20 feet. 20 feet deep. Now look at this lake. You're putting a collection line all the way down this lake and more over here and more around here. Those lakes have to be drained to below the design of your trenches for your gravity sewer. Mr. Gibson didn't tell us about this. This was never part of the vetting of the technical memorandums. This is brand new. It went from 1 million gallons a day dewatering under Montgomery Watson when the CSD had the project. Now it's 9 million. Magical numbers. This is hiding the ball. Folks, thank you for showing me that. If I could have. So if you look at Rusocchio here, if you can get him in there, thank you. He's got a nice little cap on. You notice the emperor has no clothes. This is the ramrod that's forcing this badly conceived sewer on us. He says that, just let this thing get out there where it belongs, please. Thank you. He said to us that $165 will cover the cost. He was able to do that because he kicked out the loan for 40 years. But what he doesn't include is that we're already paying $20 a month for the previous assessment. That's a $20 million number. You lied. Lied. Excuse me, you didn't hold that hard enough, but you know, I mean, the whole thing is, it's such a ridiculous show. And the prior speakers talked about the poor people who can't afford this. Well, there are people on Section 8 out there that are going to lose their housing completely. Those are the neediest people there are. And I say, shame on you for lying to the Coastal Commission. This is a criminal operation all the way down the line. You misrepresented the truth. Think about it. You misrepresented this whole project to the officials, and I can prove it.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow, and Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of our public commenters seemed rather concerned about the bases for the cost estimates that we've been using on the monthly cost of the of the wastewater project. And Mr. Freiberg is in luck today up in the front row. I think on another item we have John Diodati, who's one of our Public Works Administrative Services management individuals. I can assure you that the cost bases of these estimates have been explained in detail in these chambers on a number of occasions, and Mr. Diodati can walk you through where the information can be found in public and get your math straightened out there. So that's
very good. Thank you, Supervisor Gibson. I have no more requests to speak on public comment. So I will close public comment and bring it back to my colleagues on the board. And as this is the first meeting of the month, it's an opportunity for board members to speak to any of the items and issues that they may be engaged in as representatives of this board to other agencies. Supervisor Gibson, do you have anything to report at this point in time?
I don't believe that I have addressed you or the public on the fact that I serve as the county's representative on the First Five Commission, which is more formally known as the Commission for Children and Families for San Luis Obispo County. It administers money that comes from the tobacco tax and tobacco tax settlement, I believe. Specifically for the benefit of children aged 0 to 5. And just give you a little bit of background, I took that position about a year ago, and just after the commission had established its new strategic plan, which organizes its activities into five large initiatives, as they call them, all, again, focused on children 0 to 5 years old. One of them is the health initiative, providing access and care to public health services. Another is oral health services, and I think we're quite familiar with the efforts to get pediatric dental care going in this county. A third is perinatal substance abuse, trying to get pregnancies to term without the abuse of substances that will cause a great deal of challenge and no small amount of heartache as young children develop. A fourth is special needs, a wide range of developmental issues there that this commission funds. And the fourth is school readiness, trying to make sure every child has access to high-quality preschool and that they're ready to take on kindergarten when that comes. Specific effort underway right now is discussions within the commission and within the many partners in the nonprofit and in the public agency realm of the commission to establish a children's bill of rights, which really would amount to a statement of many of our values, things that I think we all believe in, but it's good to have explicitly on in writing as we consider our work going forward. And among the models that we have is a bill of rights that was passed in San Mateo County. I'll read just a couple of about, it looks like, 10 or 12 bullet points. That children be resolved, we resolve to invest in all children and youth so that they have a healthy mind, body, and spirit that enable them to maximize their potential. That they have freedom from mistreatment, abuse, and neglect. That they have a voice in matters that affect them. That they have a sense of hope for their future. And this is, again, being under discussion. I imagine that the commission will bring forward a document for consideration by this board. I'm not sure quite what the schedule is. But I think as I've gotten to know the individuals who serve this commission and the partners that work with it, we have a remarkable group of folks in this county who are devoted to the well-being of our youngest residents, and it's my pleasure to serve.
Very good. Thank you, Supervisor Gibson, and I'm reminded when you speak of the First Five Commission, a Chinese proverb that states that children are one-third of our present and all of our future. So, thank you for your work on that. Supervisor Hill, do you have any updates for us?
Yeah, well, real quickly, Mr. Chair, last month I spoke to the Adult Services Policy Council. I just before the governor's May revise came out, and I had Dan Buckshy, our budget director, and Emily Jackson, also from the admin office, join me so that we could give folks an update on essentially the gloomy cutbacks that are coming down from the state that affect a variety of services that we discharge, everything from in-home support services and such. So we did have a discussion of that that was useful, if not particularly uplifting. EBC Economic Development Project continues to gain a lot of interest in a variety of ways. For instance, I was on a panel a couple of weeks ago that the Slo Chamber of Commerce put on. They had about 100 people from Santa Cruz in town. It was organized by Santa Cruz, I think Santa Cruz's Chamber of Commerce. I also had all five members of the Santa Cruz City Council in, and I was on a panel with which included Dave Yonke, who's an executive member of the EVC. And we're seeing continued interest throughout, probably, I guess, as the state situation continues to be in such turmoil, much more regional, municipal interest in coming up with economic development plans. That's what Santa Cruz wanted to talk about. As you know, San Luis Obispo, the city, is endeavoring into that right now. Mike Manchek is on that steering committee as well, was asked. So that was interesting to see that continue. More regions are pushing forward on economic development plans, because I think even the lieutenant governor said when he was in our town not long ago that there's no reason for any of the counties or the cities to depend on the state. So more of us are moving forward with our own plans and doing the best we can.
Yeah, and personally, I think it's a potentially better solution if local jurisdictions take on their own economic development and become more self-sufficient, and I appreciate your efforts in that regard. Supervisor Meacham?
Nothing.
Okay. Supervisor Teixeira?
Thank you, Chairman Patterson, and I represent the board on the SynCal Health Organization Board, and one of the major points of conversation we're having right now is how to deal with or how to gear up for the 2014 Medi-Cal expansion component for the Federal Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Supreme Court is still out on that decision as far as we are concerned. Hopefully have a decision sometime this month, and we'll make adjustments as need to be. As most other agencies and supervisors alluded to, we're in the dependent on the state funding, and it doesn't look good from our point of view. With the budget in limbo and financial cuts all over, we're having serious problems getting our reimbursements to our customers and that kind of stuff done. One of the major problems we see, like I said, the cash flow on those, but the budget outcome, and that's what we're waiting for right now, is the, when the budget comes and the governor approves it, it will hopefully be in our favor. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Teixeira. And I just have one item to share. I'm the board's representative on the Carrizo Plain National Monument Advisory Committee, and we have a, over the past many years, we've been developing a management plan for the Carrizo Plain National Monument, and that's been approved by the Secretary of the Interior, and we have a meeting on Saturday, June 30th, from 10 to 2. P.M. at the Carrizo Plain School to talk more about the implementation of that plan, and we do appreciate public participation in that effort. So again, Saturday, June 30th, Carrizo Plain School, 10 a.m. To discuss the Carrizo Plain National Monument Management Plan. So thank you for that update, everyone, and we are going to take just a short 10-minute break. We'll reconvene at 10:50. We have two more items on our open session agenda this morning, so we'll be back at 10:50. Okay, Madam Clerk, would you read the next item on the agenda, please?
Item number 31, a hearing to consider a resolution authorizing the collection of service charges within county service areas 1, 1A, 1F, 7A, 18, and 21.
Thank you.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Jenny Brunick with County Public Works.
The item before you today is part of a routine annual process where the service charges are placed on the property tax bill for various services performed. After the public hearing date was set, 8 parcels were removed from the County Service Area 21, Cambria's top-of-the-world neighborhood. This was due to the portion of Bradford Road being paved, so the service charges would no longer apply to these parcels. Today, the Public Works Department is recommending that your board adopt a resolution which establishes the 2012-13 service charges within certain county service areas and then authorizing placing those charges on the 2012-13 tax roll. The service charges were previously adopted by the board-approved ordinance. All the required public notices have been met. And this concludes my staff report. Any questions?
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Brunet? I see none. I'll open it to the public at this point for public comment. I have no request to speak, so I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board for action.
Move the staff recommendation.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and
seconded. Thank you.
Staff's recommendation. Madam Clerk, this does need to be filed with the auditor, who is here with us. thank you, Mr. Seebach.
For coming down.
I'd like to call for a roll call, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Motion passes. Our next item, let's see if you can match Ms. Brunick's efficiency. Mr. Diodati, Madam Clerk, would you introduce this item, please?
Item number 32, a report on the Proposition 218 results for the proposed CSA 23 Drought Reliability Assessment District 2012 in the community of Santa Margarita.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson, members of the board. My name is John Diodati, and I will do my best to be as quick as possible. This item is the conclusion of the Prop 218 proceedings for the community of Santa Margarita. We started this proceeding back in March of this year, and 218 assessment proceedings take a couple months. So what we have today is we're reporting the conclusion of the May 22nd public hearing, and there was indeed a majority protest by the property owners of Santa Margarita to not pay for the drought reliability program and state water intertie project. So the recommended action for your board today is to ratify the results of the Prop 218 assessment proceedings and adopt the resolution abandoning the assessment proceedings for CSA 23.
Very good. Thank you. Questions for staff? I see none. I'll open it to the public. There are no requests to speak from the public, so I'll close it to public comment and bring it back to the board for action. So, Mr. Teixeira?
Move to approve staff's recommendation.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to staff's recommendation. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
I'll have to abstain, please. Thank you.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Okay, thank you. Moving on. Thank you, Mr. Diodati. You may have surpassed Ms. Brunick's record time. let's see. The next item on our agenda is closed session. I'll open it to the public. There are no requests to speak on closed session, so I will close it to the public and bring it back and ask Mr. Jensen for an estimated time.
About 30 minutes.
Okay, thank you very much. And we have no afternoon session today, so we'll come back, convene open session after closed session, and conclude our meeting.